Hello, this is Rob Piam, and I'm delighted to welcome this to the studio today Mike Naber, who is a local historian and author, and his most recent book is called St Albans Own East End, which has got a slightly London-y ting to it. I'm not quite sure what it means. Can you explain it to us, Mike?
Yes, sure. When I was ferreting around in Hearts Advertisers as I was doing my research, the general manager of Smith's printing agency, which was the very first factory to arrive in Fleetfield, was also a councillor. In 1913, the city was considering expanding into the Fleetfield area, the added areas, as it was called. And there were already quite a lot of factories, workshops, houses, but all higgledy-piggledy, and some of the streets were unmade. Most of the streets were unmade, lots of mud and so on. I'm not quite sure whether Mr. Townsend thought that we should enter Fleetfield, but he described Fleetfield as being like St. Albans' own East End. And when I caught that phrase, I just knew I had to make use of it somehow or other. Very quickly, it became the default title. It was the working title to start with, but I chose not to change it.
Okay, so the implication there is that when you the area that you're looking at is something that has grown beyond what was there before. Now, to help us here, because when I came to St. Albans 35 years ago, I saw it as it is today, effectively, that there's been more building, but it's effectively covered all these areas. What you're saying is that there was the original St. Albans, which was the central area, is that right?
Central area, and the city boundary went down as far as the Crown, Camp Road, Clarence Road area. Beyond there was the responsibility of the rural district. But as the town expands, as I suppose most towns really want to do in the end, if they feel that there are a goodly number of ratepayers in the area beyond, they'd like to take over extra areas because they get the extra income, plus, of course, the factories and workshops in that area. So at the time I started, I was referring only to Fleetfield. But of course, the more I researched, the more I realised that there were interesting areas beyond. So the books, both of them, cover Marshalswick, Smallford, in fact, going right out as far as the boundary with Hatfield Parish, because St. Peter's Parish, of which Fleetfield and part, was really quite a vast area of land. One's got to have a boundary somewhere. And I chose to go, where possible, up to the boundary of St. Peter's. That wasn't always nice and tidy, as one might think, because I did choose to exclude Coney Heath and London Coney and Sandridge, because they were villages in their own right, and all had had books of some kind published about them at some point, so they got excluded.
So the majority of the expansion that we're talking about here was in the 20th century? I mean, are we saying that in the 19th century there were some factories there?
Nothing there at all until 1897. Although the area we know as the Cavendish Estate, Albion Road, Cavendish Road, near the Crown, that had been built in the 1880s. But beyond there, there was nothing. And in fact, it's interesting to pose the question, would there still have been nothing if certain events had not happened? It's the theory of unintended consequences, I suppose. In 1896 or thereabouts, St. Albans School, that had been removed from the Cathedral Lady Chapel because of the renovations, they went into the gateway and they had aspirations to improve the school, expand the buildings and so on. And they owned three fields in what is now Fleetfield. And in order to pay for these improvements to the school, they sold two fields. A person called T.E. Smith from Enfield heard of this sale. He owned a printing, mainly a jobbing printing firm in the City of London, just off Fleet Street. And he had intended to become more commercial. To do that, you needed a lot of space, which they didn't have in the city. And they wanted to move out somewhere near a railway, somewhere where there was room to expand, but nowhere, definitely nowhere near a public house. So he purchased two of those fields, one on either side of the Hatfield Road. He built his factory, And that was called the Fleetfield Works because of his associations with Fleet Street. Then a few houses were built on the other side of the road, which became the Fleetville, as in village. And it was called Fleetville from then until now.
Roughly where are we now when you think of today? I mean, where were those factories?
You'd need to think of Morrison's. I think everyone thinks in terms of either pubs or supermarkets. And in Fleetville, there is Morrison's, which exists on the site of the Belito Hosiery Mills. And the Belito Hosiery Mills occupied the buildings that Smith's printing agency vacated after World War One. So that's the area we're referring to.
And presumably it went on expanding once he'd established that printing works.
That was printing works.
And then it went on beyond that. Other factories came in?
A lot of things happened at the same time. He thought that he was moving into open country. That's why he had these houses built, and that's why he had a few shops built opposite the factory, a little terrace of shops that's still called Bicolour Terrace after the name of his house in Enfield. But also, at the same time, other things were happening. It's interesting that on that side of St Albans, quite unlike any other area of St Albans, the land ownership was in Earl Verulam's hands, some Earl Spencer. But on the east side of St Albans, that wasn't so. And there were many owners, different small areas of land, Gorson, Gape, Kinder. Then there was St Peter's Farm that was under different ownerships at different times. All of these people were struggling with making the land pay for agricultural purposes. Very slowly, they all began to sell for development. And as soon as Smith arrived with his printing works, another owner who had purchased St Peter's Farm, which had its base down at the Crown, he sold, and quite a lot of the houses that were built between the Crown, what we now know as the centre of Fleetfield, got built within a few short years. And therefore, Fleetfield itself expanded within probably 10 years, which is very quick for development at that time. And between all these houses were all these workshops as well, people owning or renting houses. And then in a back shared back workshop, they ran a forge, or they were making something or repairing something or sewing something.
And here we're still really talking about the cusp of the centuries, end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th.
In 1897, it's when it all happened, started. And by the First World War, most of Fleetfield was full.
And it was not just, it was factories, it was houses, it was workshops.
It was all sorts of things.
It was a mixed community.
That's right.
Which went as far as where? Rats Castle or
interesting
that?
You should mention Rats Castle. We'll probably come back to that later. It went beyond there because the Beaumont's estate on Beaumont's Farm, which is a little bit further out from Fleetfield proper, that was sold off in chunks from 1899 onwards. First of all, on the south side of Hatfield Road, the area we know as the camp. Then on the north side of Hatfield Road, the area known as Salisbury Avenue, Eaton Road, and Beaumont Avenue. And then in 1929, the rest of the farm was sold off, which became what was known as the Beaumont's Estate, Beechwood Avenue, Woodland Drive, which is where I was born and grew up, out towards Oaklands, which was developed in the late 1920s, and the very interesting pub called the Bunch of Cherries, for those who like their watering holes, that started off immediately post-Second World War as a pair of builders' huts.
Why did you pick me up on the Rats Castle? Why did you say we're going to come back to that? What's so interesting about that?
Yes, yeah, so the Rats Castle is one of those places, like some events, that have legends that have passed down. Nobody's really quite sure how the building came to be, the original building that's on the site, not the present building. And they always think of wonderful stories that they can tell to create the feeling of the Rats Castle. Unlike many of the legends about the East End of St Albans, this one does have more than a ring of truth about it. Originally, it was a toll house for the Turnpike Road. The Hatfield Road was a turnpike road at one time. it was put up very quickly and very cheaply in the 1840s because the Turnpike Trust realised that people were circumnavigating the Hatfield Road in order to avoid paying the toll. And they were doing so via a farm, a private farm footpath. Whether it was with or without the owner's permission, one will never know. And so they put up a cheap and cheerful toll house on the corner of Sutton Road and Hatfield Road. It didn't have a name while it was in use, but once the turnpike went out of use in the 1880s, the building just stayed there. Somebody who wrote a letter to the Hearts Advertiser remembering this toll house described it as she came down the hill from the town towards the Crown, passing where the park is now, and she could see all the way across to the Rat's Castle, as she named it, and this would have been when she was a child in the 1890s, and she described it having a thatched roof with all the rats living in the roof space in amongst the straw. And it appears that the locals had given it the name colloquially as the Rat's Castle. And in fact, the field in which it stood, they named the Rat's Castle Field. And it appeared in the first census in 1901. So its name preceded it. And then eventually, after 30 years of trying, Fleetwood got its public house. And they named it, of course, the Rat's Castle.
Was Fleetville ever East End in the sense that London's East End, which was the sort of very tightly compressed, some social difficulties that would ensue from the closeness of the work to living and the factories?
Yes. Was it like that? I'm sure that's why Ernest Townsend referred to it as St Albans' own East End, because he did relate it to the East End of London, which was near enough to being part of the city as we know it, which is where Smith's early printing factory was. So, yes, streets of small terraces, some of them, each house maybe as little as 18 feet plot width, almost all of them rented.
And the roads like Hatfield Road would have been much narrower?
The Hatfield Road was much narrower. In fact, there is a little section of Hatfield Road which is still its original width, and that is the section running past the Cavendish estate from the Crown to the beginning of the cemetery. The part where you can't get a bus and a car through at the same time, and most of the rest of Hatfield Road had been widened in bits and pieces since then. But it was originally all that width. And in fact, Townsend himself, writing a piece for a free newspaper in Fleetville around about 1915, remembered the field before his factory came, and he said that the road even then was still narrow enough not to be able to get two carts past at the same time. So, and of course without pavements and so on, but there weren't any motor cars, so that was all right.
Okay, now we're going to take a break, because I should explain that this is two volumes that you've produced.
Yes, it is.
Full of pictures, full of information, massive amount of information. I want to find out a lot more about some of the detail, but also more, or perhaps about why you decided to set out on this monumental task. So, Mike, thank you very much for the moment. We'll come back for another visit to the subject.